Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekdays at 11 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Angela Davis, and you're listening to NPR News. Did you get some exercise over the weekend? Fitness centers and gyms across Minnesota have reopened. They've been back in business for about 2.5 weeks now after being closed because of the COVID-19 pandemic. Today, I have three guests joining me who either own or manage a fitness center, and I will ask them how the reopening is going and how many of their members are returning. First, though, I want to chat with NPR's Chris Farrell, our senior economics contributor. He joins me each Monday to fill us in on what's happening with the economy, both nationally and locally. Hi there, Chris.
Good morning. And I'm looking forward to your conversation about with the gyms, like last week, where it was the hairdressers and the barbers. I mean, this really gives us great insight into this economy.
Yeah, we're trying to take it industry by industry. And as we've been talking about, people are returning to stores and restaurants and bars as the economy is reopening. And good news for the businesses and their employees. But, you know, that recent rise, the surge in COVID-19 infections in some states, that certainly must threaten the recovery, doesn't it?
Oh, it does. And it says how fragile is this economic recovery? And I really think the key word is uncertainty. That has been one of the big themes of our conversations, Angela, over the past couple of weeks, which is we're reopening the economy. People are going out there. They're experimenting. They're trying different things. But so much is dependent on what happens with the coronavirus. And now when you're looking at Texas, Arizona, Florida, Arkansas, you know, you're seeing an increase, recent rise in cases. And so there's a little bit of a pullback going on in these economies. So it's not enough to derail the economy, but it is enough to put a pause in there and to cause concerns about just how robust will the recovery be from this economic lockdown period that we went through.
And some of these state leaders, haven't they acknowledged that they reopened too soon?
They did. And, you know, there is definitely a learning curve going on. Governor Abbott of Texas said, you know, the big mistake that he made was the reopening of bars. Mm-hmm. And you also that was just probably not the best idea. So, you know, people are trying to learn. I do think here in Minnesota, you know, we've had this very careful rollout, as you're now going to be talking about the gyms, you know, the sort of careful rollout of certain kinds of businesses. And, you know, therefore, I think it makes it easier to monitor. Where we're seeing a lot of the spikes right now are states who are extremely aggressive about reopening. And even though not all businesses did, it seems to be there is enough activity that you're seeing a spike in cases.
And I'm also seeing a lot of news reports about how it's going in other countries. And many of these other countries seem to have done a much better job of containing COVID-19 than the U.S. has done.
Well, you know, it seems, Angela, that over the weekend, I was just constantly looking at variations of a chart. And it was with the European countries, you're having the cases going down. And in the U.S., you're having cases going up. And so Europe has done a much better job. And it does appear that one of the key differences is that the European nations, or most of the European nations, sort of waited till what we've been talking about here in Minnesota, where you get that sort of downward slope before reopening. Whereas here, there was just a lot of movement fairly early on. Yes, there was sort of a flattening out, but not, what's the metaphor, you know, not bending the curve, mm-hmm. and just opening up too early.
And what is happening with the federal government, and what does Congress seem to be focused on right now in trying to address all of this?
Okay. So As I mentioned, one of the themes of these conversations is uncertainty. And there is uncertainty about what will Congress do. It's pretty clear right now that the economy needs more support. I think that's the message that's coming out of the past week with the increase in cases and the pullback from the reopening that's going on in mostly in the South and Southwest. So that's the key message there. The House has passed the $3 trillion, what they're calling the HEROES Act, mm-hmm. of which one third would go toward state and local governments, because state and local governments, I mean, their costs have just skyrocketed. They just have. And their revenue is way down. Also, we're going to see the expiration of a number of programs. For example, the additional $600 mm-hmm. for those who are on unemployment insurance, that expires July 31st. A lot of stuff expires or gets reduced back to lower levels at the end of July. So there's a lot of pressure. The administration has put out word that they're saying, you know, maybe we do want another relief check send out, maybe about around $1 trillion, which that would include a relief check. The Senate Republicans have been in the go slow lane, but with the election coming up, my expectation is we're going to start seeing some movement.
And so I know as we watch unemployment numbers, they're, you know, we talked about the unemployment report last week. May's report was a surprise, but there's another one that's coming out that should give us some idea of how June is looking.
That's right. So we get the unemployment numbers on July 2nd. And the expectation, you know, this is good news. I mean, let's just say it. I mean, this is wonderful. The expectation is we'll see a 3 million jobs. The economy will recover nearly 3 million jobs in June. And that's on top of 2.5 million in May. So that's really welcome news. But now let's put that in perspective. Unemployment's still going to be in the 11.5% to 14.5% range. That comes from Mark Zandi. He's at the head of Moody's Analytics. Mm-hmm. And the reason why the range is so wide between 11.5 and 14.5 is some difficulties accounting who's looking for a job, who's not looking for a job with the pandemic. So this is the way that I'd look at it, Angela. Good news that if we get a really solid gain in June, nevertheless, about a quarter of the American workforce is still either unemployed, underemployed, or had their pay cut.
That's a lot of people.
It's a lot of people.
And again, that uncertainty, we don't know how long this will continue.
No, and that uncertainty just feeds in there. I mean, the May report was a better than expected. I expect, you know, this June report is going to be better expected. But then when we are in August and we're looking at July's numbers, will some of the pullback that we're seeing going on in mostly in the southern states right now, will some of that pullback also be reflected? And, you know, what we're really seeing, Angela, and again, you know, your conversations have really reflected this. There's a lot of caution out there. A lot of businesses are extremely cautious, and a lot of customers are being very cautious. And so, you know, this revenue is down, small business revenue is down. So we're coming out, we are moving, but everyone's trying to figure out what risks are we comfortable with? What risks aren't we comfortable with? And how are we going to respond to the coronavirus as we see it flare up in different parts of the country?
Now, we also get reports on how people are spending money, household spending, and I know that has sharply increased in May. People are doing a lot of home improvement work, for example.
Yeah, we're just in this world of record numbers. I mean, it just record numbers on the bad side, record numbers on the good side. So household spending on goods and services rose a record 8.2% in May. And that's more than double the previous record, which came in 1959. So there's a good sign of some pent-up demand. And a lot of the spending was on big-ticket items, you know, cars, refrigerators, sofas, that kind of thing. And, you know, when I'm wandering around different neighborhoods in the back streets just trying to get some exercise but not be around too many people, I'm also noticing, I don't know if you are, a lot of remodeling projects are going on mm-hmm. that people seem to be adding to their deck, or they're putting a little tiny pool in the backyard, or, you know, just a lot of projects going on in our neighborhoods.
So what are you seeing that could make for a stronger than expected recovery? Are there any signs that, of some good things that are happening that we could benefit from.
Yes. So there's a couple things you can build a stronger than expected recovery off of. You know, one of them is home sales. So, home sales, they're strong. The supply of homes is down, but the demand is above the supply. And so we're really seeing some nice gains in the housing market. So very different from 2008, 2009, when you had this national collapse in the housing market. And that really took the economy down. So the housing market is doing well. We have a stock market that continues to do well on a relative basis, and investors still are optimistic that a lot of these globally competitive companies, multinational companies, are going to do well. And then Bloomberg had a very, very nice story about the increase in the savings rate in the United States, which is, it sounds odd to be saying this. I mean, it sounds really odd. So, because so many people are unemployed, so many mm-hmm. people are underemployed, all these pay cuts that we were talking about. But there's also a lot of people who are continuing to work and they're making an income and they're not spending that much. They're just not going on vacation. In fact, they've canceled their vacations. They're not doing a lot. They're not going out to the restaurants. They're not doing a lot of the things that they normally would be spending their money on. And so the personal savings rate, it jumped to over 30%. And the latest number we have, it's still around 23% plus. We haven't had a personal savings rate over 10% since 1995. So at what point does that consumer get confident enough in the economic recovery to start spending? These are the kinds of ingredients that people are looking at who are arguing for a stronger than expected recovery.
Well, their confidence, I'm sure, is shattered. I mean, they may sit on their money for a very long time.
Well, this is the thing. And I'm more in the camp that says, yes, they may spend a little bit, but they're going to be precautionary. They're looking around. And one of the things is, remember, small business is 50% of employment in the United States. And a lot of small businesses, even the ones that are kind of making it, are they going to continue to make it through July? Are they going to be able to make it through August and September? And so I think everybody is going to continue to be cautious. I think this flare-up that has happened, and I'm not quite sure what is the right metaphor, because we're still in the first wave, but the spike in cases that's happening in the South and the Southwest, I think mm-hmm. that's actually sent a very cautious message to everybody. You know what? Maybe I want to hold on to my money a little bit longer. Maybe I want to be a little bit more cautious. You know, I'm going to pay down some of those debts. And, I'm just going to manage my money in a way and manage my spending. It's not that we're not going to spend, but it's very hard for me to come up with a scenario where people are going to be that confident to say, you know what, I can take on some debt, I can spend some money because I'm confident that I'm going to have my job a month from now.
But Chris, even if you are still continuing to work, you've not experienced, a layoff or furlough or pay cut, because we don't know what's around the corner. I'm sure there are many people who are worried that they may get laid off in the coming weeks, and they are holding on to their money for that reason.
Exactly. You know, the initial unemployment claims, that stayed high. It's down a little bit, but it's still, at a very, very high level. And one of the things, there's an economist, and we talked about this last week, there's an economist, Robert Farley. He's at University of California, Santa Cruz, and he's been doing these numbers looking at small businesses that go inactive. And so he updated the numbers that includes May. So, the number of active business owners is now down by 15% since February. And the hardest hit are African-American business owners, drop of 26%, Latinx down by 19%. So I worry about these small business owners, the inactive. Is being inactive temporary or permanent? And the odds are increasing that they become more permanent if we don't see an increase in government programs. Because remember, a lot of them are going to phase out or shrink to smaller levels. And so small business is really struggling at this time.
And as we look at small business owners and also, what is happening, with COVID-19, until we have a vaccine, I mean, we know that the virus could, continue to come back? I mean, people perhaps could, you know, continue, you know, have it once, recover, be exposed again. So I think a lot of people will continue to hold on to their savings. And, you know, what will that mean for some of these businesses that are reopening and operating at, you know, partial capacity?
Exactly. And by the way, I think it's really smart of people to hold on to their savings. I think it's smart for people to be stockpiling money at this point, because as a household, as an individual, as a family or an extended family, your job isn't to support the economy. Your job is to protect yourself from the downside. So it's a really smart thing for people to be doing. It's a smart thing for people to be paying down their debts. And since the course of the coronavirus is so uncertain, and, you know, we just don't know where it's going to go next, and there's so much that we don't know about recurrence and everything that we're kind of learning. It's an amazing global scientific effort to come up with a virus or to come up with treatments. And I do think there is going to be faster progress on the treatment side so that the death toll should go down. And that would be very, very welcome news. But this is, you know, it's a word, Angela, that's been used too much, or people are complaining about it, but it is really true. This is unprecedented territory. And a lot of our models that we reach back to sort of try and figure out, well, what might happen in the future, a lot of our models just aren't working right now, because we were back in, you know, December of 2019, you know, 3.5% unemployment rate. This has been a remarkably fast downward spiral. And so we're all kind of reaching for lessons, but we all have to be cautious.
Right. There's some other news we should touch on, Chris. President Trump announced that tens of thousands of foreign workers will be banned from entering the U.S. through the end of the year. What effect will this have? How much of an effect will this have on the economy?
You know, I think that it's been interesting because the business community has come out pretty strongly against this, and particularly because the H-1B program, which emits, it's about 85,000 professionals a year, and mostly in the high-tech industry. And there, you know, there have been abuses in the program. There's a general agreement that we need to, you know, make some reforms there. But it's been intriguing that this is being considered the Canadian Jobs Promotion Act, that the way that I'm looking at it is not just this one particular executive order coming from the president, but we've become an increasingly hostile country to immigrants. And a lot of the educated immigrants are now moving up to Canada. And you're seeing huge gains in the tech industry in Toronto and in Vancouver, meaning just all the Canadian cities. And so we do live in a global economy, and the skilled labor and the labor that's come in through the H-1B program really has added to our productivity. And there are these studies, Angela, which are really kind of interesting. You always have to take them with a grain of salt, right? You always have to be, these are studies. But it does suggest that for every H-1B worker here, that adds to jobs domestically here in the United States. So the business community has not been happy with this.
And it's a range of types of workers. Yeah. You have seasonal workers, technology industry employees, corporate executives. I mean, just all kinds of workers here.
Yeah. So the Migration Policy Institute, which is a you know, they're one of these nonpartisan groups. And they say about over the next 6 months, about 167,000 workers and their families will not be admitted to the United States.
So, Chris, an industry that I saw getting a lot of news coverage over the weekend is the airline industry.
Yes.
And I was horrified. I was frightened when I saw some of the photos of airplanes completely packed, like every seat filled. Because I thought that there were restrictions in place, that airlines were trying to leave space between seats. But it depends on which airline you're flying.
It depends on which airline. So I think we're going to get a classic lesson in how markets work. So you have Delta Airlines, which is saying that they're going to keep capacity down to 50-60%, which basically means that a lot of the middle seats are going to be empty. Southwest Airlines, the same thing, JetBlue. And these commitments are through September. American Airlines, which is the one that got a lot of the attention over the weekend, said, look, we're going to be filling up our planes. We're going to try and keep some of the middle seats empty, but we're moving toward filling up more of our planes. So we'll see what the customer does, because, you know, Again, just like governors can make all kinds of pronouncements, presidents can make all kinds of pronouncements, markets work. So we'll see what the customer does. And Business Insider did a nice story where the other day, one of its reporters flew on Delta and flew on American. And he had a very good experience on Delta, and he did not have a very good experience on American. And so, as he said, at least at this particular moment in time, Delta came out ahead.
And I saw an interview with a woman who represents one of the flight attendant unions, and just the discussion was about how flight attendants will have to enforce, you know, the rules or try to encourage people to wear their masks, and that's a terrible position to put them in.
It's a terrible position to put in, and this is one of the reasons why I do think that it becomes important for government to really take a strong stand, because what you're really trying to do is relieve – you really don't want the attendant, the person in a clerk in a store, you know, having to enforce these rules to sort of make it more, here's the way we're going to operate under this period of time. But I do really feel that's asking a lot of employees.
And then I also saw that some countries, some European nations are thinking about not allowing Americans to travel there.
Well, you know, they're looking at the same numbers that we're all looking at right now, and it looks like, I don't think it's been done formally, but all the news stories are that because it's felt that the United States does not have the coronavirus, COVID-19, under control, that when the travel advisory comes out, we're not going to be welcome in Europe.
As I look at the calendar, July 1st is looking at me there on Wednesday, which is when rent is due,
yes.
Mortgage payments are due. How are folks doing in terms of paying the rent and mortgage, as far as you know?
Well, for mortgages, first of all, where mortgages, it's been very easy. If you need to defer paying your mortgage, it's been very easy actually easy, I'll put in quotes. But the system is set up so that you can defer your payments. So on the mortgage side, I think, you know, the system is working really well and actually is underappreciated how important it has been supporting the housing market. On the renter side, what has been really striking is how much rent has been paid. It's in your 80% plus range of rents have been paid, and it appears that it's a combination of the fiscal stimulus or the relief payments, really. Stimulus is the wrong word. I think now we might want to use the word stimulus, but the relief payments and also landlords being a little more flexible. So that combination. But now we're getting into, you know, we're getting into another month. We're going to have to watch and see what happens. The real concern, at least from the people that I'm reading, is when we come into August, because unless we get another fiscal relief package, then a lot of the fiscal relief will have dissipated or been spent by that time. And then that's when we may see a crunch, again, unless Congress acts.
And are you seeing anything new as far as who is hiring right now? Anyone, any industry that's still looking for workers, or are we sort of seeing the same types of jobs?
The gains, and we'll see what happens when the numbers come out for June. But the gains for May were, you know, it was pretty across the board. I mean, most industries, and part of it is so many industries, whether they had technically furloughed their workers or just, you know, had laid them off, but really furloughed them, calling back their workers. So it is across the board. Where we are seeing obvious slowness is in those industries, the music industry, the conference industry, you know, industries that are dependent on getting people, a lot of people under one roof to have it enjoy themselves for entertainment or to be gaining information. Those industries are still not hiring much.
Well, Chris, thank you so much for taking time to talk with us and dissect these headlines that we see across the week. That is NPR's senior economics contributor, Chris Farrell, who joins us each Monday morning to get us up to speed on what's happening with the economy. Thank you, Chris.
Thanks a lot.
You're listening to NPR News, and I'm Angela Davis. When you add music to a workout, it can really help keep you moving. Exercise is what enables many of us to maintain physical and mental health. So when the state ordered fitness centers and gyms to close in mid-March because of the COVID-19 pandemic, many Minnesotans were not happy about it. They saw their workout routines come to a halt or drastically change. Now, some folks started working out at home, buying up equipment and gear to create home gyms. Others spent more time working out on their own, outdoors, by walking, running, or biking. And then as the state started to give businesses the green light to gradually reopen, fitness centers were among the last group that were able to do so. The question I'm asking today is this: now that fitness centers have reopened with restrictions and safety measures in place, are you going back? And if you are the manager or owner of a gym, have you been able to hold on financially? Give us a call right now at 651-227-6000 or leave me a message on Twitter. I'm at Angela Davis, NPR. I have three guests joining me now to talk about all of this. Ashley Wagner is with us. She's the general manager of Lifetime Plymouth. Hi there, Ashley.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well. And we also have Pamela Hasselbring.
Yes, Hasselbring. Right.
Thank you. Pamela Hasselbring, who is the owner of Pilates Minnesota and Physical Therapy in Wayzata. She's on the line. And Jen Wilson, who is the co-owner of True Grit Society in Minneapolis. True Grit Society, which is in the uptown area of Minneapolis. Are you there, Jen, as well?
I'm here.
All right. Hello. We're going to talk to all three of them, Pamela and Jen, in just a moment. I want to start with you, Ashley. A lot of folks work out at Lifetime. So how is the reopening going with the Lifetime Fitness Centers? You're the general manager there at the Plymouth location.
It's going great. Members are so happy to be back, so thankful that the restrictions were lifted to allow us to reopen. And they're doing great with our protocols and our safety measures in place. We're seeing them back and happy to be back and saying that, you know, the club is cleaner than ever, and the protocols we put in with half hour wipe downs of touch points and team members getting temp checked and masks on, leveraging the disinfectants proven to kill the virus and reducing capacity and opening up every other machine to maintain social distancing, you know, has just made them feel really comfortable returning. So
what is it?
A great spot.
What does it look like, Ashley, if I were to walk in? What would I see on the floor? What's the noticeable difference? I imagine lots of signs that are up.
Yes, I would say tons of signage as far as just helping remind people to keep that social distancing. But probably the biggest impact and the biggest thing we've done is really if we couldn't move a piece of equipment 6 feet apart, really 7 feet side to side, front to back, then what we did is we went through and put social distancing stickers on them that basically say, you know, this one is reserved for social distancing, which means pretty much in the cardio area, every other piece of equipment is open to, again, maintain that social distancing. So you don't even have to think about it. If a sticker's on it, that one's closed. Go to one of the other ones.
Now, how does wearing mask work? When are you required to wear the mask, and when can you take the mask off?
Sure. So as a team member, as soon as you enter the building and swipe in so that we can account for you being in the building, you come to the temp station, and then myself or one of the other manager on duties is there to kind of take you through a questionnaire. It's a health screening, you know, just have you had a fever? Have you felt feverish? And we actually take their temperature to ensure it's less than that 100.4 per CDC guidelines. We also ask questions around, you know, has anyone in your family been sick? Chills, cough, shortness of breath, sore throat, muscles, aches, loss of smell or taste. And we take them through that whole questionnaire. We temp check. They do hand sanitizer in their hand, and then they grab one of the masks, put them on, and from that point throughout the rest of the club, masks on at all times for team members, maintaining 6 feet social distancing for team members. No talking to someone for more than 10 minutes at a time, so that, again, keeping that social distancing. And then we basically, if anyone feels sick at any time, I mean, they are to go home immediately. If they have any of these symptoms, they are to go and meet with their health professional before they're allowed to return to work. And then we follow CDC guidelines as far as that 14-day self-quarantine.
So, Ashley, that's for your employees. But what happens when I come in, when I check in and I want to work out? What's the requirement for your guests and your members?
Sure. So as a member, stay home if you're sick or with a fever, cough, or shortness of breath, washing hands and using hand sanitizer upon entry, keeping 6 feet away, making sure everyone's wiping down equipment before and after use. And we've also added fitness floor attendants that in case there is that member that walks away without wiping something down, we're eyes on it and we wipe down for them. Masks and gloves right now inside the Plymouth facility are optional. They're not required. Some members do, some members don't. But until under governor order, currently at the Plymouth facility, those are optional.
And that's because if you're on the treadmill or on an elliptical machine, you're breathing heavily and it would be hard to wear a mask.
Exactly. And you are 6 feet, actually more than 7 feet, front to back, side to side from the nearest person.
And so what do you know about what your members were doing while you were closed? What were you hearing from people when you were not able to have folks in?
Oh, it's been amazing. The conversations have included for those that could buy fitness equipment, they did. But for those that couldn't, you know, they followed the guidance of some of our lifetime on-demand classes to do our online videos that we created for them so that they could stay connected with their lifetime community right from their home. Some of their favorite instructors taking them through workouts that included anything from, if you can't find dumbbells, grab a gallon of milk, you know, and let's use that for some bicep curls. So we did help our members get creative and provide online workout videos that several who maybe weren't ready to return when we reopened on June 10th and said, you know what, we'll take you up on that complimentary one-month hold, has said they've been able to work out using the online videos and hope that they'll just continue until they're more comfortable returning in a couple of weeks.
All right. This is Ashley Wagner, the general manager of Lifetime in Plymouth, and I want to grab a phone call from one of our listeners as we have this conversation about the reopening of fitness centers across Minnesota. Christine is on the line in Minneapolis. Hi there, Christine.
Hi.
Hi.
Yes, I have a question. It sounds like the masks are optional in some places. Are there any places where they're required? I have a mother who's 96, and we're very worried about her health. I mean, she's fine right now, but anyway, I want to make sure that we go to his fitness clubs that are require masks as opposed to they're optional. Can we find any like that?
So, Christine, I would imagine it would be up to the individual business. Now, I work out at a community center, and the way the mask works, you wear the mask in the lobby when you check in, but then once you get to your actual machine or your workout area, you're not required to wear the mask. You can take it off. And Ashley, there at Lifetime, is that what you're also seeing?
Yes, that's what we're also seeing. We do currently have two clubs in Minnesota, though, that do require the masks, which is per the protocol you just mentioned, and that is Highland Park and Target Center downtown, if you are searching for a club that in Minnesota has the mask requirement right now.
So even, I mean, the whole time that you're on the floor, the whole time you're there?
No, it's exactly what you had said. When you come in, check in, mask on. Once you get to your machine in your workout area, you can take it off.
Okay. All right. Let's get to our other guest that's on that we have with us. We have Pamela Hasselbring on the phone. She's the owner of Pilates Minnesota and Physical Therapy in Wayzata. Good morning to you again, Pamela.
Hi.
So describe your reopening and what the Pilates, you know, workout, what happens inside of your studio?
Well, we do require the mask the whole time. When you're doing a Pilates workout, it's not as heavy breathing as you might find at a Lifetime or another gym. So, and we do have a lot of 90-year-olds that work out with us, 80-year-olds, do a lot of privates, do a lot of physical therapy. So we do require that when they come in, they take their shoes off. We tell them when to come in. They go wash their hands. They get on a machine. We took two machines out, so we'd keep them, you know, 6 to 7 feet apart. They stay on the machine the whole time with a mask on. And then at the end, they clean with soap and water, and then they put all the props that we used in a dirty bin. And then they go back and we dismiss them so that we keep them 6 feet apart. They wash their hands. They can also, you know, use some Purell when they leave or when they come in. That's also available too. And then we disinfect everything afterwards. We keep the classes 1 hour apart so we have time for the disinfect. We found a bio-esque cleaner that we really like that's safe and a healthy cleaner, and we just leave it on for 4 minutes. It can either dry on there Or we can, after 4 minutes, you know, wipe it down. So it really disinfects everything. So we're just keeping track of that. I really am concerned about some of our employees. I want to make sure that they're safe. So we want the masks on both sides, and as well as the clients. So I don't want to get any older clients mm-hmm. sick either. So we do require that.
And Pamela, what's your estimate of how many of your members or your regular customers have returned?
You know, it's about 75%. Mm-hmm. You know, there's still some out there that are, like, not ready, which we totally understand. Some people are taking care of older people, older family members mm-hmm. that don't feel ready to go back yet. So, you know, it's still good. We're happy to see that the people return, and, you know, when everybody's ready to come back, they will, and they're happy that we're open. So I'm glad we can provide that for them.
And you do physical therapy there as well. How has that changed?
They are not doing any hands-on. So they are doing physical therapy through the Pilates, because Pilates is a really nice physical therapy-based way to help out with issues that people have. Mm-hmm. So they are not doing any manual work on anybody at this time.
And tell me about your conversations with your members when you were closed. What were they saying? I mean, were many of them experiencing, you know, pain or discomfort because they weren't able to do their normal workouts? What did they say?
You know, we have virtual classes too. So we did live on-stream classes. So they were live, so we could see them working out at home. So you can mm-hmm. actually, we can actually tell them online, you know, hey, that alignment isn't right, and they'll correct it. Mm-hmm. So it was entertaining, but, you know, and we still have those virtual classes for those who are not ready to come in. And so we still see a lot of people on our virtual classes too, on our live stream classes.
And can you speak to for many people, why it is so essential for them to have access to the fitness centers or the workouts that they have become accustomed to, and why it was so hard when you all were closed?
You know, I think with this pandemic, it just kind of proves that the best thing we can do for ourselves is keep our wellness and our fitness going. Mm-hmm. And that hasn't been stressed enough, I don't think, in the media. You know, they talk about how the pandemic has caused, you know, so many underlying conditions with a lot of deaths with this, and just mm-hmm. people understanding, hey, let's work on our health and fitness and change some of the habits we have that can, you know, help promote us to stay healthy throughout life. So I think all of our fitness businesses are super important for that.
And you've been able to stay afloat financially?
Yeah, the PPP loan helped. When Dean Phillips, Congressman Phillips, and Chip Roy of Texas, I was hounding them along with a lot of Minnesota businesses about changing this PPP loan, and luckily we did get the PPP loan. So when they changed those rules, it did change the game for us as far as keeping afloat.
All right. So hang on with us. I want to take another phone call from another listener in Minneapolis. Jack is on the phone. Good morning, Jack.
Good morning. Just want to provide perspective. Today, Core Power opened up. Got a chance to go take their yoga sculpts. But they do require face masks during class and upon entry. Yoga sculpt is a little bit of aerobic class.
Yeah.
But at the same time, the doors, teacher opened up the door to kind of cool out the space. They turned down the temp so it's not so hot. But it was good to see masks, and they marked out the floor, and everybody had safe distance.
And you feel safe going back?
Absolutely. Not during maybe the middle of the day, but we get up earlier before anybody else goes there, so the mm-hmm. numbers aren't as high. But in a typical class pre-COVID, you know, there may be 30 to 40 people. Today there was 10.
Ooh, okay.
So there's a lot of more space mm-hmm. available.
All right. That's Jack in Minneapolis. I want to bring in another one of our guests, another owner of a fitness center. Jen Wilson is with us. She's the co-owner of True Grit Society Gym in Minneapolis in the Uptown area. Hey there, Jen.
Hi there. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. So how is your reopening going? Because I know you're a fairly new business, correct?
We are. We are. Well, when we got shut down, we were less than mm-hmm. a year old. So we had my husband and I, we had over 50 classes going at that time. And I think point is that we actually have three different rooms of different things going on. We have a yoga room, which is about 1,500 square feet. We have a spin room, which is about 1,500 square feet with 20 bikes. And then we have 3,000 square feet for our HIIT, kickboxing, boxing, your endurance, strength classes.
Your group classes, yeah.
And so, yes, and we are all class-based, yeah.
And are people coming back? What's your estimate of the percentage? Or how many of your members have come back so far, Jen?
I was a little jealous of the other ladies, I gotta be honest. We honestly have maybe seen 10% come back. Mm. We closed with about 60 members. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have a very close relationship with every single one of our members. So they have my husband and myself's phone number or email or whatever. So we know that there's a lot more that goes into agreeing to come back. And I really feel like, you quarantined yourself for 3 months. You're not just going to throw that away because you really just want that high of a workout. You can do that by doing other things. So, you know, we've stayed in touch with a lot of our members. And during the quarantine, we also loaned out all of our equipment. So the people that have chosen to come back have brought back our equipment. There are some people who have said they don't feel comfortable, and we've let them keep their equipment. They're continuing to work out from home. And additionally, we do run our classes. We have a deck. Mm-hmm. And we have a big parking lot. And so we've been trying to make sure everyone feels safe as well.
With outdoor classes.
With outdoor classes. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm addicted to our outdoor yoga class on Sundays. It's fantastic. I think there's a little bit of a difference because, you know, we're all connected very closely. And so our members trust us that we would not put them in harm's way. And so we've, you know, made it as safe as possible for them. And, you know, my husband and I also have a daughter to go home to. So, you know, we have to be safe for ourselves as well. So
Jen, imagine that this has been a big financial hit. The amount of money you invested in just getting up and going and all that equipment. How are you and your husband, as co-owners, how are you getting through this financially?
Well, you know, I've had to keep a full-time job just to stay afloat. Our landlords have been helpful in providing us some assistance, but we have not qualified for anything, any assistance from the state, from the county, from federal, nothing. I was told multiple times that we fall through the cracks, unfortunately, just because we weren't open a year, we don't pay ourselves. There's a lot of different reasons. We don't have the general gym models that your instructors are 1099. So we don't qualify for PPP. So, you know, we are just, you know, on a wing and a prayer right now, you know, we're going to go as long as we can and we'll see what happens, you know.
I'm going to bring in another one of our listeners on the phone as we talk to owners and managers of gyms across Minnesota about the reopening, the safety measures that are in place, and whether or not people are going back. If you want to share your story, the number is 651-227-6000 in Minnetonka. Steve is on the phone. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning. Yes, I wanted to tell you about the experience I've had with the Minneapolis JCC in St. Louis Park. And they're coming back very cautiously. The only thing that's open is the fitness center and the gyms. Mm-hmm. The locker rooms and showers are closed. And they are not having any classes. They're still giving classes online. They are discouraging seniors from coming back to the fitness center as well, and everything is scrubbed down. You're required to wear a mask, and even when you use some personal equipment like weights and bars and those things, after you're done, you take them, you put them in a separate area where they're then cleaned and then put back in. And I come during the day, so I don't see the early morning rush. And sometimes I almost have the place to myself. So few people have come back. They do get more people coming back first thing in the morning, but they've got capacity to take many more people. But they're being very cautious on how they're coming back and reopening.
And did you have any hesitation when you got that email notification that they were reopening? Did you hesitate or were you ready to go?
No, I did have a hesitation. I didn't go the first 2 days. And then I decided, well, let me see what's going on there and how it was working. And in effect, I was actually a little disappointed that there were so few people there when I came. Mm-hmm. Although, like I said, I practically had the place to myself.
Well, I appreciate you calling and sharing your story. Thank you so much. Let's grab another listener in Cambridge here. We've got Jack on the phone. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi. Have you returned to your gym?
No, I haven't. And I have I'm 69, and I've been working out in an indoor gym for many years and really will look forward to going. But my concern is the indoor environment of, you know, air being circulated. I know a lot of churches are not returning because if you're in with other people, the air currents circulating around will linger for, you know, minutes, if not hours. And I'm just wondering, that's my concern about returning, is the indoor air environment, not the cleaning and those things. It's just the circulation of air.
Yeah, I'm with you. I had some of those same concerns. And I'm going to ask Ashley Wagner this question. Ashley, you're the general manager of the Lifetime Fitness there in Plymouth. People who are concerned about the air that's circulating, knowing that, you know, the droplets, you know, this is a respiratory virus that we're, you know, concerned about. What can you say about trying to make that environment as safe as possible?
Yeah, we actually made changes prior to reopening to further uphold our commitment to handling ventilation and air quality in our clubs. We adjusted our ventilation rates based on what we knew was going to be the occupant density. We were bringing in more outside air into any of the smaller spaces of 1,600 square foot, like our group fitness studios. We actually put in brand new MERV 13 air filters. And we increased air circulation during the HVAC systems to just improve the overall indoor air quality to more than exceed the CDC guidelines. So we actually made major changes to our HVAC systems during the closure in prep for this so that we could catch smaller air particles and be able to circulate air more frequently throughout all the spaces in the club. Great question.
And Ashley, remind me again, what are the restrictions in terms of capacity for fitness centers? Is it 50% capacity that you're allowed to have?
I believe we moved to the 50% capacity phase this past weekend, but we've been operating under the 25% capacity based on square footage. Just some people ask, well, why haven't we even moved in our swim lanes to the new swim capacity where you can have 5 swimmers per lane? Here at Lifetime, we're still operating on 2 swimmers per lane simply because we're taking those extra steps. We want our members and our team members to feel really safe. And so some CDC guidelines offer you a little bit more flexibility, and we're staying on the extremely cautious side.
All right. I want to read a couple of comments on Twitter as we talk about the reopening of fitness centers across Minnesota. Roger writes, I was at mine the last day and back the first day. Anytime Fitness is doing a great job providing a safe workout space. Deb wrote in, and Deb writes, I went to Planet Fitness last Thursday, and I plan to go again this week. I was glad to be back. It's big enough to easily maintain distance from other people. I felt comfortable working out, but not ready to use the locker room quite yet. And so people are, some choosing to go, some still waiting it out a little bit. Let's take one more phone call in Minneapolis. Phil is on the phone. Phil?
Yeah, hi. I partially own 3 studios. It's called G-Works Fitness, and we do this small group training program. And we ended up having to close one of our locations that we had just opened up, and it was really tough. We had just spent several years saving up to build out and open a new space, and we had to close that. But we've kept 2, and we've had to really scale down, remove a lot of equipment. We have like 10 feet between every single person now. We have a lot of retired folks that come, so we're taking this extra precaution, and we are making everybody wear a mask. And you know, we've had pretty good success. I think we're going to be able to manage to keep the 2 locations open that we've kept. But it was a real struggle, I'll have to say, and it was a hard decision to lose a business that you had spent, you know, 4 or 5 years of time getting to get it open.
All right. Well, we are coming to the end of our hour, and I want to thank our guests who have joined us this hour as we talked about the reopening of fitness centers during the pandemic. Ashley Wagner, the general manager of Lifetime in Plymouth, Pamela Hasselbring, the owner of Pilates Minnesota and Physical Therapy NYZ, and Jen Wilson, the co-owner of True Grit Society Gym in Minneapolis, all open, all taking those safety precautions. Thank you, everyone, for joining us, and be safe. This conversation,
thank you, Angela.
Yeah, this conversation was produced by NPR's Karen Zamora.
You just heard a recording of a live radio show from NPR News. To add your voice to the conversation, you can call in at 651-227-6000 or tweet us at Angela Davis NPR. And if you missed us live, you'll find all of our shows by subscribing to this podcast. Thanks for listening.